Syrian tanks have been battering homes. There's no sign of aid getting in. What do you and the Friends of Syria do now?
We have to continue to consult with those who truly are friends of the Syrian people, which of course includes the United States and, you know, the many governments and organizations that gathered in Tunis on Friday. We are doing everything we can to facilitate humanitarian aid. Secondly, we continue to ratchet up the pressure. It is an increasingly isolated regime. And third, we push for a democratic transition by working with and trying to build up the opposition so they can be an alternative.
But activists say you need really humanitarian corridors. You need to get aid in, people out. How do you do that without some sort of outside intervention?
Many of the people in the Syrian opposition have been quite vocal in their objection to any outside interference. And many of the countries that gathered on Friday are also quite vocal. What we tried to do in the Security Council was to get international support and legitimacy for the Arab League peace plan in order to have some leverage with the Assad regime. And unfortunately, Russia and China vetoed it. So it's a distressing and difficult situation. It's not the first that the world has seen, unfortunately. But we remain engaged at every possible opening to accomplish our three objectives.
But there was a lot of talk about and controversy about whether you arm the opposition, help them get arms. Is there anything the U.S. can do short of that? I mean, logistical support for the Free Syrian Army, satellite images to help them set up these humanitarian corridors?
Well, they don't have tanks and they don't have artillery. So I know there's a lot of frustration and I share it. This is a deeply, deeply distressing set of events. But you have one of the most highly militarized, best defended countries on earth because, of course, they spent an enormous amount of money with their Iranian and Russian friends, so equipping themselves. And even if you were to somehow smuggle in automatic weapons of some kind, you're not going to be very successful against tanks. And so the dilemma is how do we try to help people defend themselves? How do we push the Russians, Chinese, and others who are, in effect, defending and deflecting for the Assad regime to realize that, you know, this is undermining not only Assad's legitimacy, but theirs as well.
You, in fact, called the Russians despicable on this trip.
Well, not personally, but in terms of actions, I think, you know, continuing to arm a government that is turning its heavy weapons against their own citizens, I mean, you know, there are a lot of words to describe that.
I want you to take a step back a bit and just to look at this political earthquake in the Arab world, as your Turkish counterpart likes to call it, how have you been adjusting to this new environment, and particularly the rise of political Islam, Islamist groups?
Well, look, I believe in freedom, and I believe in democracy, and I believe in self-determination, and I also believe in human rights and freedom of speech and freedom of religion. And so what we are supporting are in countries that have every right to have self-determination and to set up their own democracies, the path that they're on. And at the same time, reminding Egyptians and Libyans and Tunisians and others that democracy is not one election, one time. It is building institutions. It is carefully nurturing and tending the attitudes, what we call the habits of the heart from our own early experience, a phrase of de Tocqueville. That's difficult. It's difficult for any political party or leadership. You know, everybody wants to believe that, you know, they're best for their country and their people. But it's important that the United States, which supports the aspirations of all people everywhere, also stand up for the values and principles that make democracy workable over the long term.
You spoke in Tunisia and Algeria about the need for moderate voices, and I wonder if you worried if you're worried that they're being drowned out, that these changes across the region are becoming particularly violent, and what does that mean for U.S. interests?
Actually, I am not worried about that here in the Maghreb. I mean, we're in Morocco, which has had a very good election that led to new leadership taking place. I'm looking forward to working with them. I was just in Algeria, where they are planning for elections in May. And, of course, you were with me in Tunis, where an Islamic based party was elected, but is in government in a coalition with parties representing other points of view. That's the way it should be in a democracy, because no matter who you are or where you live, there's not unanimity of thought or feeling or political philosophy. So I'm not expressing concern so much as speaking out about what we hope to see, because we're judging these new governments on not only what they say, but what they do. And certainly in Tunisia, they are saying all the right things. They are saying that they will protect women's rights, that they are saying that they will protect human rights. And now we want to see that actually take place. But there is one element which I am concerned about, and that is how people who were oppressed for so long, and particularly those who are of Islamic persuasion, are so well organized, because they had to be. It was a matter of survival. Whereas many other voices in the society, the voices of business leaders, the voices of academia, the voices of young people, are not politically organized. So wherever I go, I encourage those who are also hoping to reap the benefits of freedom and democracy to get involved in politics. I mean, politics is no easy game, as I know as well as anyone. But if you're not at the table, then how can you blame people for pursuing certain programs that you may not agree with?
And you've said you're getting off the high wire of American politics after this job. So is there one thing that you really want to get done in this region before you leave office? You have a few months left. Or is it just going to be putting out fires?
Well, I've always said from the very beginning that we do the emergencies, which are the responding to the fires right now. We do the important, which are trying to make sure that the fires don't get out of control, and then we are looking at the long term. So it's a constant panoply of all of these challenges. But in particular, with respect to the Arab Spring, the coming of democracy to the Arab world, I want to see it take root. And of course, I want to see it understand that elections are not the end, they're the beginning. That you have to build institutions, you have to have an independent judiciary, you have to have a free press, you have to protect the rights of all minorities, religious, ethnic, you have to certainly empower and protect the rights of women. And this is at the beginning. We're watching something unfold that is probably a generational enterprise. So I'm encouraged in many regards by what I've seen in Tunisia, what I see in Morocco. The jury is out on Egypt. We're waiting to see how that will actually be implemented. But the United States will help those who are truly invested in democracy that is not based on elevating some voices over others, imposing philosophical or religious beliefs on others, but truly having the free flow of ideas within a political culture that takes hold in these countries.
Madam Secretary, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Michelle.